What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah.
It's always soccer in Philadelphia on a Tuesday, even when we are locked in our houses in Philadelphia, in California, in Texas, wherever you are in the United States. We're practicing social distancing, we're washing our hands, and we're trying not to do anything stupid. You know, we don't have Philadelphia Union soccer, unfortunately. The game was canceled on Saturday. No games for the foreseeable future. So, you know what? I thought this would be a good idea to do a feature interview, one of the former player interviews that we'd like to do on the podcast. And as such, I have a Philadelphia Union original on the phone with me right now out in California. It's Amobi Okugo. Amobi, how are you, man?
Hey, how you doing? Pleasure to connect again.
Yeah, for sure. So what are you doing out there? You're still playing with Austin Bold, but you guys had a game that was out in California, and so you ended up just staying out there.
Yeah, so we were on the flight to LA for a game, and then next thing you know, by the time we landed, we got the announcement that MLS and USL seasons were suspended for a month. So our team was kind of scrambling around trying to figure out what to do. So. Between our GM and our coach, they decided to get like the immediate flight back to Austin. And then a couple of guys like myself are from California, so we decided to just stay in LA. And then I realized, oh, this might be more serious than it is, so let me get to Sacramento, where my family's from, before I get locked down in LA. So I'm in Sacramento. Our team has the week off until we figure out more information regarding the corona.
So what was the extent of the instruction that they gave you guys? Did they just say, look, you know, do what the local government tells you to do and try to stay in shape and we'll be in contact when we figure this thing out?
Yeah, so they gave us a workout plan to, like, stay in shape. But right now, just stay secluded, stay safe, stay clean, and, don't do anything against the guidelines that have been provided, like, on the news and through the group chats and stuff like that.
So what's the extent of what you're able to do? Are you able to, like, go run outside, or do you have a treadmill in the house, or do you have a weight room? Like, what are the things that you're actually able to do right now?
It's taking it back to, like, my elementary high school days when I had to, like, work out on my own. So a lot of home body workouts.
Yeah.
I go outside for, like, a run. There's, like, certain gyms that are open but, like, closed to the public. So doing that as well, but just try to stay away from people.
So if you kind of had, like, if we did theoretical scenarios here and we said, we'll say, like, it's delayed a month and a half or 2 months or something, would you prefer that they just try to add the games to the back end of the schedule? Do you think they should just abandon those games completely? Would you be okay with maybe stuffing them in on a Wednesday or Thursday and playing midweek games? Like, what do you see as kind of, like, the best case scenario here?
Midweek games, you know, make them up over the course of the season. I know, like, for us, we had a couple byes throughout the season, like two or three bye weeks. So I think, best case scenario would be back in May. So it's only like four games that you could kind of stuff here and there. I think that's the best course of action, in my opinion. Allows for more players to play. You know, you're going to have to rotate guys. So give other guys an opportunity to play and, you know, not have to make it up at the back end because people love their offseason.
Yeah, I hear that. It's kind of, and you guys have it a little bit better, I guess, because you're at the beginning of the season and, like, the NBA players and the NHL players are, you know, like, right up at the end of it, you know? Because they only had, like, 17
NBA,
or 18 games, you know?
Yeah. Like, the March Madness for the NBA guys. They had, like, someone might propose, like, a March Madness type layout.
Yeah.
And that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. What did you make of, you know, there's an idea that they're kind of tossing around of, like, you know, these seniors, like, I feel bad for players who were going to March Madness or they were playing spring sports or something and their seasons are just over right now. Like, do you think it would make sense to maybe try to give them some eligibility, let them play another season, or How do you see that happening?
It's so tough too, because you know some people like make their name during the March Madness tournament, but then again, it's like a whole season. I don't know. I think maybe have like an extended combine for those guys. Because I feel like the NBA scouts really, in terms of like professional, the NBA scouts already know who they're looking at.
Yeah.
But like for those seniors that are never going to play again, they're missing out too. So it's really tough because like they literally ended their season. So it'd only be like one or two to five more games left. So I don't know about like, but at least for the basketball guys, for like the baseball or like the spring sports, okay, let them have their eligibility. But for like the guys that are missing March Madness, I don't think they should have a whole season to make up a possibility of 4 to 6 games at most.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I mean, let's hope it doesn't last any longer than it has to when we get back to playing real games sometime soon. So anyway, listen, Amobi, we haven't seen you in a while. I guess it was 2015 you went to Orlando from Philly. You played with Portland for a little bit, played with KC for a couple games, and then you spent last season with Austin in the USL. So how was that experience for you? And just kind of bring us up to speed, Union fans who haven't been able to catch up with you in a while.
Yeah, it's been quite the journey. So after Philly, bounced around Orlando, Kansas City, Portland, and now I found myself in Austin. Austin's been amazing in terms of being able to play soccer, you know, just being grateful to play soccer at the end of the day. And Austin's a great city. A coach who I know very well, Coach Marcello, someone I've known from the national team, has kind of given me the opportunity to just play soccer without any worries and just be in a great city. So it's been pretty fun. Playing a little bit of center back, playing a little bit of center mid, like always, tackling people, you know, doing what makes me happy. So it's been cool to see, and especially with the MLS team coming to Austin, you know, there's like a little bit of a buzz coming to the city. So it's funny as well, like when people are asking, like, "Oh, are you guys in the MLS?" But no, we're that other team in the city, but they're coming in next year. So it's good to see that people are starting to get interested, especially in football country.
Is it a big enough town to? I've been to Austin once, but I was there for a football game. Is it a big enough town that you can have two soccer teams, or what's the dynamic going to be like with you guys?
Yeah, it's gonna be real interesting to see. To be honest, they're gonna have to figure out a way to work together. I mean, when you're already competing with football, it's best for everybody to be on the same page, in my personal opinion. But Austin is so spread out in the sense that if you market it right, and there's enough room for everybody. But once again, you're competing with football, so you got to find a way to, you know, kind of be unique in that sense.
So
Austin's a very diverse city, so
yeah,
we're right.
Yeah, I was there for a football game last year. Actually, it was really cool. It was a really cool city, like just a lot of buzz. I thought the cool thing was how there's like bands everywhere playing all the time, just like downtown.
Oh yeah,
like, playing outside.
Crazy
yeah,
crazy out there.
Yeah, it's a fun town. Good place to play, I'm sure. But Amobi, refresh me, because I don't. You didn't play anywhere in 2018, right? Did you take a year off, or what happened there?
Yeah, 2017. Yeah, 2018, I didn't play a whole year. I was a free agent, took like a gap year. I moved back to Sacramento, focused on some family things I had to worry about. And then I was about to retire, and then I decided the Austin situation came about, and I decided to keep running around the soccer fields for a little bit longer.
So what was that decision like? Like, what was the difference between you know, continuing to play in USL versus hanging it up?
To be honest, I was just like, when I was during the gap year, I was like focusing on like helping out the family and doing some personal projects. And like during the weekends, I would still watch soccer, like watch all the MLS games, watch even some USL games, European games. And a buddy of mine's like, "You're not ready to be done. You like literally, you watch all these games. You're comparing yourself. You're like doing analyses." So then, when the Austin situation came about, it was just a good situation to kind of get my feet back into it, and then hopefully go from there. So the love of the game still didn't go away in that sense. So, you know, decided to run around a little bit longer.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, and you're only, what, like 28 or 29, right? So you got a bunch of good years ahead of you. I'm 35, and I'm, like, you know, worried if my my Saturday adult league career is over.
Yeah, that's what they say, but, you know, it's a lot of miles to put on the lake. So, yeah, I feel like I got a good amount of years left if I want to go that route.
So I want to get into your union stuff because obviously it's a Philadelphia Union podcast, but let me just work backwards quickly. You spent some time in Portland, a little bit of time in Kansas City, Orlando before that. What did you make of those experiences, and what was it like? How did those compare to your time in Philly?
They were all amazing experiences. I was able to learn a little bit out of each spot. Portland, I was probably there the second longest tenure compared to Philly, so that was cool to have some, like, roots down in the city, and, like, their fan base is amazing, so that was really cool. We did well the second year I was there. I was able to play in the playoffs, finally, played two games in the playoffs,
yeah.
Even though we didn't go, even though we didn't advance, it was cool to, like, play in that playoff atmosphere. Kansas City, I was kind of hurt the whole time, so that didn't really go as planned, even though we won Open Cup. Sorry to bring that up because it was against my family.
Yeah.
But, and then Orlando, it was cool to, like, experience like an expansion team on, like, the other side, whereas before with Philly, I was a rookie.
Yeah.
And then when I was with Orlando, I was more of a veteran. And it was interesting to see, like, some of the things you didn't notice, like, when an expansion year as a rookie, because it kind of just goes over your head. As a veteran and, like, knowing how the league works, understanding that. So it was, like, a cool perspective from, like, the business side. But obviously I was only there for, like, 6 months. So I didn't get to experience it in full, but it was cool to see and, like, interesting to learn about and just seeing how the sports business side works from a more experienced lens, I should say.
For sure. Okay, so when it comes to your union career, you know, I was, like, looking through old articles I wrote and old interviews and stuff like that, and I was trying to sort of capture what the essence of Amobi's tenure in Philly was. And I just found it interesting that you kind of, like, you guys who were originals who played up until 2014, you know, you had the expansion year. You know, the team comes in with not a lot of resources, kind of trying to find its footing, you know, three different coaches. I don't know. It seems like you guys were part of the team when they were still trying to build a foundation and trying to get things going. I mean, when you look back at your time in Philadelphia, what's sort of the way you encapsulate it?
It was amazing to see, like for us to get through those early days to kind of be part of the transition into, like, what Philadelphia is now. I think it's amazing to see because I feel like Philadelphia, if it started off like early, yeah, it would have been cool, but I feel like it needed those early years to really understand, like, all right, if we're going to move forward, if we're going to understand, like, what it takes to be successful in this league, we needed these early years to kind of go through. And although, like, we didn't get the rewards or, like, the credit of being able to, like, fight through that and survive the ups and downs, it's cool to see, like, the hard work that, you know, everyone that was involved for those first 4 to 5 years really plant the seeds to what Philadelphia is now. And I'm sure Philadelphia, as much as they are happy with everything going on, they know that the sky's the limit and they can continue to keep pushing. So for me, it's really cool that I have those memories with those guys on the team, and to see where it is now is amazing.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it, isn't it? You know, I mean, like, because somebody had to kind of lay that groundwork, and, you know, there was a whole group of people, fans, players, you know, coaches, staffers, ticket sellers, stuff like that. I mean, all those people, really, you could put into the category of, like, people who busted their ass to kind of, like, lay the foundation for this thing and get it to where it is now. I mean, because you look at, you know, they're putting 18,500 people in that stadium and they're replaying instant classics on Fox Sports 1 on Sunday night. You know, I mean, like, it's not yeah, I don't think the Union would be where they are now if it wasn't for, you know, everybody in the beginning putting in the time and effort, you know?
Exactly, and I feel like some of those memories to this day are still going to be some of the top memories. Like, you know, no one's ever going to forget that first game in Lincoln when Sebastian scored the 3 goals, or the first game in I don't even know what the name of the stadium is now, Subaru Park, PBL Park. Against Seattle, you know, the game where Cleverson scored like the free kick in extra time, or like extra time, Open Cup, hosting the Open Cup, like everything. Friday night game versus Red Bulls, that was amazing, packed out. Like, all these different memories that allow Subaru Park to be what it is now, and like the training facility stories, the state of the art facility now.
Yeah.
I wish I could go back and see how it is, but you know, that's life.
You don't miss practicing at Chester Park?
That's a good memory to Chester Park, but no, I did not miss it.
So seriously, like, what was, I mean, do you guys look back at that at all and say, shit, like, I wish we had that facility back then? Or do you just say, look, like, it is what it is. It was a new franchise trying to come up, and you know, you're happy for the guys who do have that now.
Yeah, I feel like that's everything in life. Like, it's like when you talk about, like, when the NBA guys talk about, like, these players are, like, they get all this stuff. It's just with the times. Obviously, if I was, like, my little brother's age, he's 18, like, coming into MLS now, oh, it's a whole different story.
Yeah.
But that's just how it is. So we do have funny memories, and, like, do, like, debates in the group chats about, like, is it more about, like, these players getting more exposure, or are they actually better? Like, the facilities that they get, like, how much is this helping them compared to what we had? But it's all good fun, and we support the team wholeheartedly.
Amobi, you guys who were there from the beginning and who made it, you know, 4 or 5 years, are there's actually a small group of guys who got to play for Peter, got to play for Hack, and then played for Jim too. You know, I'm thinking you, Zach Pfeffer, Ray Gaddis, Mike LaHoud. It's not a lot of guys. So I'm kind of interested in your perspective on what it was like to play for each of those guys, and, you know, any similarities or differences that they might have had.
Sorry, can you repeat the first part of the question?
No, you played for Peter, for Hack, and for Jim. What was it like playing for all three of those guys, and how were they different or similar?
Yeah, it was quite interesting. I would say because Jim, in terms of him being a player, and a player that, like, we could actually, like, grasp. I know Coach Peter played, Coach Hack played, but Coach Jim, like, played, like, where we, like, saw tape and, like, know guys that he played against. So understanding, like, his dynamic and the way he was coming from, and he was more, like, in terms of, like, able to fit in with us. Like, he was able to joke around but also be serious and just keep it real. That was really beneficial for us when he came in at that time, because, like, he could, like, really keep it straight. Like, you know what? Like, yeah, we're not, like, as fortunate as other clubs, but that doesn't excuse you for playing like crap. Coach Hack, like, for me, because I had a personal relationship with him since I was, like, 14, it was cool to have him, like, in your corner, almost like a, you know, father figure role. And he was a good transition from Coach Peter, after Coach Peter, just because in terms of being able to calm the whole situation down and really get us back to the basics of trying to be a formidable club. And then for Coach Peter, you know, as much as people like to talk about him, I still think he was a great coach, just in a different way. I feel like he was like the mad scientist, like, where he's too smart for everybody else, so you really have to, like, take your time to understand how he's getting this point across. But then once you finally understand it, it all makes sense. And then his coaching strategy is, like, more militant. And then I grew up playing AAU basketball, so I'm used to coaches doing that, so never really affected me in terms of, like, a coach that's hard, a coach that's all about fitness, a coach that's all about, like, you know, doing your job. but I know some people aren't used to that, so it was interesting. But I feel like every coach during my time at Philly was perfect for me at that specific time, and they're all great coaches.
Moby, I was always interested in how your career arc kind of came out. And like, there was a lot of people back then in those days of MLS who, you know, you came into the league playing one position, you ended up playing another position. You came in as a midfielder and you played D-mid 2010 and 2011, and then you got moved back to center back 2012 and 2013. And then, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you went then back to midfield when Maurice Adu came, or when Jim took over, Maurice Adu was there. You always told us when we asked you that it was like, hey, I'll play whatever position you want me to play. I just want to be on the field, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I always got the fact that you enjoyed playing center midfield more than center back. Am I correct in saying that, or is that off base?
No, you're correct. Yeah, center mid is my position. Like, that's the position I like to play. Just being able to be the transition from defense to midfield and midfield to defense was like my favorite position. Center back's not a problem, but like I always said, center back's great, but the one thing I hate is like you could play perfect for 89 and a half minutes and that one mistake in the 90th minute, no one remembers like how great of a game you had. So that responsibility as a center back is good and bad, but there was no problem for me playing it.
Well, and the other funny thing too about playing that is that like I was just gonna say, like, when you're a center back too and you get frustrated if it's like a 0-0 game or a 1-1 game or something like that, you have to resist the urge to like run up and like try to help score, whatever, you know. It's a lot easier to do when you're playing in the midfield, you know.
My first year playing center back, I used to run all over the place to try to score, and I had to realize, like, you remember, you're a defender, you can't do that.
Did you, a serious question though, Moby, I mean, do you think that your career would have played out any differently if you had come to the Union and just played like either midfield or either center back? Like, did going back and forth between that mess you up at all, or was that not really a thing?
I don't know if it was really a thing. I think the only thing with center back is because I was like a smaller, more athletic center back. So, you know, people have their preconceived notions like, oh, you need to be a typical bigger center back, so they'd always use that as an excuse. If I played center mid, like, from the first day, obviously I would have had to play well, but I think I would have been able to show out like I did when I played center mid consistently throughout my time, not only with Philadelphia, but other teams as well.
Yeah, you know what, and that's kind of, I'm glad we've kind of dispelled that myth, because if you look at guys like Michael Parkhurst and Drew Moore running around playing 10 plus years in MLS, like, they were not, you know, big hulking 6'5" dudes, you know what I mean? Like, if anything, it showed that if you have skill on the ball and you can read the game well, you can play center back in any league, really, you know.
Yeah, so it was cool to like play consistently center back for those years and show myself that ability, and I still feel like today I could still play at a high level. Like, when I was playing in Portland, even playing with Austin now, even though it's a lower level, but when we played MLS teams, I still hold my own like I always have. So
yeah.
Everyone, like you said, everyone has their preconceived notions.
Moby, what was your favorite Union goal that you scored? I would say the most important goal that you scored was 2014 U.S. Open Cup semifinals in Dallas. That was the 1-1 game where you guys advanced on penalties. But you had some good headers, too. I liked the you scored the header in the Galaxy game off of a Shannon Williams throw-in. I think that was probably my favorite one. Do you have a specific one you like?
Oh, yeah. We got smacked that game, though. So I would probably say, my first goal versus Colorado, or that goal against my header against Dallas at home, because I was able to rep my buddy's brand, as you know, Ebun, Live Breathe Football.
That's right. Yeah, you pulled the shirt off with the Live Breathe Football. That's funny. I actually just got a package from him in the mail about 2 hours ago, so go figure.
Respect. I felt like that game was like an announcement that I could play at this level, because I was playing a little bit, but then I was like, all right, our team is doing well. We've got a bunch of young guys. We've got some solid veterans and doing well. And then that Open Cup game for sure, because that was the summer Coach Curtin took over, and it was like, all right, are we going to like let this season go to waste? Are we going to like really come together?
Yeah.
And like we really came together as a team. And the only thing we didn't do is finish that Open Cup run, but we really came together as a team that summer.
I like that Colorado goal. Yeah, I mean, it was like the second game of the year, and there was snow piled up like on the side of the field. And, you know, you guys were a young team at that time, but I think you scored. I think Jack scored. It was like a 2-1 win. It was actually really fun to watch.
Yeah, it was a crazy game. And then Coach Rob was like, he's like, I have a feeling you're going to score today, because all preseason, like, I was getting close. And it was like the first season, like, all right, I'm starting the season off playing like center back, so like we know. And he just said he had a feeling I was going to score. And I was like, all right, if I score, I'm coming to you. I ended up, I don't know, Sebastian put in a great ball. And I just headed it in. And then Jack scored later, and we won. And it was like, we definitely started off great that season, but we didn't have the legs to hold it off for the whole season.
Yeah, yeah. You know what they're doing? Because there's no games on TV right now, they're going to play a bunch of classic Union games, like on the website and PHL 17 here. Yeah. So I was like giving them suggestions. I wrote down Seattle 2010, the first game you guys played at PPL.
Okay. Yeah.
I wrote down 6-2 when you guys won 6-2 in Toronto.
Yeah, it was a crazy game. Yeah.
2010 versus Sebastian. Obviously the hat trick there. The 2011 game where Roger came on and he scored against Red Bulls. That was another one. What do you, if they were looking for recommendations on what classic games they should go back and watch, what do you remember?
Oh, bad, you put me on the spot. Okay. that game, Roger came off the bench that game, or he started that game?
Roger in the New York game? He came on as a sub. That was the game, I think that was Henri's first year. Because he came on, it was on national TV, and he scored in like his first touch, and PPL was like the loudest I've ever heard.
Oh yeah, I remember I played that game. I got lucky that was a crazy situation. Another game when we fought Chivas, basically, like three red cards that game, and then if Freddie Adu scored or Jack Mack scored.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Game if you want to watch.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
There was a certain game when we like had to win, or we were going through it for a little bit, and then we had to win to like keep our place in the standings. I don't know what it was.
Do you remember the 4-4 that you guys played against New England? 4-4 at home.
Oh, that was a crazy game. Yeah, when BC tracked that guy back, yeah, I put that up there. For sure. Yeah, he tracked him from like 60 yards out. What a game that was.
Yeah.
There's a couple of other good games. I think I'll try to pick one from each coach. So, okay. Nowak game, that 2011 New York game was good. But also, we had another game. I think it was versus. There was a game we came back down like from 2-0 to win. Not sure.
That wasn't. Was it Columbus? Was there a Columbus game in there? There was a comeback.
Yes, and yeah, there was actually a game with Coach Curtin when we played Columbus. I'm not sure if we lost that game or tied, okay. But all right. It was a good back and forth. It was towards the end.
You know what? Another good one is actually you guys went up in to Seattle at the end of 2011. And you got a 2-0 win up there.
Yeah, that was a good one as well.
Yeah, because then I think you came back, and I think you got a draw with Toronto, and I think that's how you guys clinched the first playoff berth in franchise history.
Yeah. With Jim Curtin, we had a game. We beat Toronto away. It was when they had, like, Josie and all them.
Yeah.
We beat them 1-0 away. Connor Casey balled out that game, I remember. Coach Hack, we had a game versus D.C., I believe. Jack scored like a hat trick in the first half.
That was a great game. That was a great game. I remember that one, yeah.
The Seattle Open Cup game in the final, that was good. That was like a crazy game. trying to think. Oh my gosh, I'd have to I might have to tune in too because I'm forgetting some games.
Well, if you here's what we'll do. If you remember any, just text me and I'll write like a note at the bottom of the podcast description. Okay. I'll say Amobi added these later.
Yeah,
all right, I only got two more for you, and I'll let you go. Number one, are you still doing Frugal Athlete and some of that the side stuff that you were working on? I know you went back to school and you got your degree, and you had always kind of been active doing stuff off to the side during your playing career. Where are you at with that stuff right now?
Yeah, so I just completed my master's in sports law. Through a College of Law at Sandra Day O'Connor at Arizona State University, and I still do a full athlete. I had to take a little step back while I was going to school because my time was limited, but now I'm back on doing a full athlete. So we have the podcast, we have the website, we have all the content going for that as well.
You know, one of my favorite stories from back in the day, one of my favorite sports stories, I've been doing sports for like 10 years now, is when your parents told you that the only way you could enter the draft and go pro is if you get your college degree, right? What was it like to fulfill that for them?
Yeah, it was good, and not only for them but for myself too. Because if I didn't have like school on the side, especially that first year and a half when I wasn't playing, I would have just been crazy in the room. So to give myself something to do and like something to pursue as well outside of soccer. Because, as you know, you've been in sports for over 10 years. There's a lot of guys that come and go. So, be able to have that kind of that safety net and use sports as a vehicle to complete school is really amazing.
Yeah. Okay, last one for you, Amobi. This is a question that I ask everybody who comes on the podcast, all the former players and coaches. If there was one thing of now or at any point in your playing career, that fans and media talk about, if there's something that we spend too much time talking about or something that we don't spend enough time talking about, what's one thing that fans and media can change about the way that we talk about soccer or treat the game?
Oh, this is good. I mean, it's not just one thing. I could talk about this forever.
The floor is yours, man. We got all day.
I would probably say like tactics within player roles, because like sometimes like a player, like for example, like a winger will tuck in and the media, the fans will be like, oh, he needs to play out wide. He's leaving the whole wide side open. But like the coach and the tactics of the game was like, he needs to tuck in because he needs to fill the gap between, the center mid and the forwards. Strategically, so understanding the tactics around why certain things are happening in the game, and I feel like compared to other like team forums, Philly does a great job of that between you and the other guys and like PSP and all that, like understanding that. But from the most part, like fans and all that, they simply don't ask the right questions or don't engage enough to know like maybe there's a reason why.
Yeah,
whether it's like leaving that whole wide side open. Maybe because they want him to have the ball. He's not as good on the ball, so they're going to lead to more turnovers. Like different things like that where there's tactics behind certain decision making. Now, if it doesn't work out, okay, you guys are free to like talk whatever. But if it does or if it doesn't, like just understand that there's probably like a reasoning behind it.
Well, it's a good answer, and actually, like a lot of people have said, similar things like that. You know, I had Ray's college coach on a month ago, and you know, we were talking about like, you know, do you have a fullback go forward and attack? You know, why isn't a fullback going forward to attack? Okay, well, maybe that's not what he's been instructed to do. Maybe he's been asked. Maybe he's been asked specifically to stay back and protect the number six, who's not really a ball winner, but he's more of a playmaker. You know, it's always impossible. I agree. It's impossible for fans and media to kind of know what's being asked of you guys if we're not in there in the locker room in the first place.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's pretty much it. I feel like that's what the beauty of sports is. Like, we can, like, talk about it and critique it and, you know, pinpoint different things. I would say, like, there are certain times when we didn't play like a certain style, but we like got the job done in one.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, well, they need to play more better soccer. Like, no, we're not really at that stage yet. We just need to win. Like, we need to get 3 points. So stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, those are fair answers, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, everybody I asked said something similar in that regard. I think Ryan Richter was saying, like, he would just wants people to know that it's not necessarily the easiest thing to go from, like, one position to another. You know, like playing, like, right fullback and right and right wing back are really, like, two completely different types of things, man. I mean, just because you're playing wide right doesn't mean it's anything similar to playing a, you know, like a four-man back line versus a five-man or, like, a three-man or something like that. But you guys have all said similar things, so I appreciate that, you know?
No, no doubt. And, yeah, that's it. I'm trying to think of something else, but for the most part,
Well, listen, Amobi, it's been fun, man. Thanks for taking some time. We appreciate it. It was good catching up with you. You are
always a pleasure.
You're a Philadelphia Union original, man, and that's always going to be that way. So we, I think I speak for everybody when we say that we appreciate, you know, all the work that you guys did back in the day, even though you had to go play at practice at Chester Park and whatever. You know, we appreciate all the work that you guys did in building this thing.
Respect, man. Respect. Appreciate it. Always happy to talk soccer, especially Philly soccer. Always a special place in my heart. So.
Excellent, man. Well, listen, just make sure you practice social distance and wash your hands, and we're going to get through it, all right?
All right, yes, sir.
All right, man. See you.
All right, see you.
All right, let's get to your questions and your comments and your concerns. Not a lot, because they're not playing right now, obviously. So, you know, we're going to be stretched for content for a little while. But, you know, if you guys like, you know, the feature interviews and the former players and stuff like that, I feel like we can probably fill the gap with those kinds of things in the meantime. I'm sure we're all looking for stuff to do while we're stuck inside and trying to ride this thing out. You know, obviously we had to cancel postpone the live podcast that we were going to do with the Larimer for the season opener. So we're just going to reschedule that for whenever they start playing again. Whenever the home opener is, we will do the podcast at that time. In the meantime, though, if you want to support the Larimer, they're doing takeout beer. If you go to their Twitter, or I'm sure it's like on their website or their social media too, they have a list of stuff that's offered. So if you want to, you have to order ahead, just call them and tell them what you want and they'll prepare it. And then stop by the brewery and you can just pay them then or whatever. So, I mean, look, they're small, they're new, you know, they could probably use our support. So if you're trying to, you know, support local businesses while this thing is going on, they're as local as it comes right outside the stadium. So maybe we can try to help them out and you know, buy some beers from them. Because God knows we don't really have much else to do while we're sitting around the house anyway. One other note I wanted to make, actually, a thought from the LA game when I was watching it on replay the other night when they had it on FS1. The Glesnes goal. You know, one of the things I made this point with Sean with Brace yesterday, Monday, when we were doing the Daily Ticket on Fox Sports Gambler, 3 to 6 p.m. iHeartRadio. You know, when you have a guy, the Union didn't really have a number one free kick taker coming into the season, right? You know, with Madunian and not there, who was going to take him? You know, Peter and I talked about, okay, Jamiro's going to knock him in, you know, right foot, hit curlers, try to put him on people's heads. You know, when you have a guy like Glesnes who can hit a ball like that, think about being 36, 38, 40 yards out. You know, normally when you're taking a free kick from that far out, how many people are you going to put in the wall? One or two, maybe? You know, if teams watch that and they say, okay, this guy can hit him from this far, maybe they add another guy or two to the wall. Maybe you're looking at a three-man or a four-man wall from 37 yards out, which is really kind of crazy to think about. But what it does is that it pulls an extra body out, and that's one fewer defender in the mixer. You know, it's one less guy playing zone, you know, because a lot of teams will play kind of like a matchup plus zone, you know, where you put one guy on each attacking player, then whoever's free, you know, just kind of floats. Like, you have your release valve at the top, your striker playing up top, and then you match up, you mark up, and then the extra guys just sort of float around in there. That's how we've always kind of played it. I mean, like, most high schools are probably going to, and college teams and Costa League teams are probably going to play some version of that. So if you're Glesnes now, and then they know that he can hit them from that far out, maybe you got three people in the wall and you have an extra person in there. So that's something to think about too. You know, and I mean, now you got Jamir, now you have the option of of cracking one from distance, or Jamiro can curl one in too. And it's kind of like the basketball equivalent of spacing, if you think about it. You know, if J.J. Redick is standing out on the three-point line, you're going to be more inclined to get out there and guard him than you are Ben Simmons, right? So it's kind of like the soccer version of gravity or spacing the floor, you know. So I would put Glesnes over the ball. I'd put Jamiro over the ball and make him think for both of those. And you got two options, two different things you can do, you know. Okay, so let's see if you guys got questions here. Big Mac, should MLS teams have gone to a regional schedule where teams could have bust to their opponents, played in empty stadiums, but have been televised to entertain people during isolation? Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one option. But, you know, look, if you're gonna play regional, you're going to bust them and play them in empty stadiums. I mean, you could have charter flights that would accomplish the same thing, too. You know, I don't know if there's any real difference versus sending the bus up to Red Bull versus, you know, taking like a chartered flight down to Atlanta or something like that. You know, it'd be more expensive, obviously, but I don't know. I think you just get screwed schedule wise. Cause if, you know, it was New England and New York and DC and Philly all playing each other, then, you know, if you got to stuff in all your games with the West Coast teams, with the Midwest teams too. So it seems like a short-term solution. I think probably the best way for them to do this, I'm not really a fan of all these people coming out and taking guesses like, well, it's going to be June, it's going to be July, it's going to be August. No, you don't know that. You know, if the CDC is recommending 8 weeks of no gatherings more than 50 people, work off that recommendation, which would take us to mid-May. And then think about how they wanted to go into this in the first place. You know, the original things that they told us were that they wanted the media out of the locker rooms. They were going to do things without the fans in the arenas. I watched a UFC fight in Brazil the other night where there were no fans in the arena. They just had the trainers, the refs, or the ref, the judges, you know, the cut man, the corner people, the coaches, and that seemed to go okay. So, you know, maybe you get to a point 8 weeks from now where you're like, okay, we flattened the curve on this thing. We feel like we're doing a little bit better. You know, if all the MLS players or all the NBA players are able to be tested and we have enough testing at that point, you know, maybe you can say, look, we feel confident enough that these guys don't have the symptoms. Curtin's good. Jamiro's good. Glesnes is good. We're all good. Maybe you start incrementally and you put them in an empty stadium then. And the stadiums are empty from theoretically May to June, and then you start bringing crowds back in June or July or something like that. Like, I think that's probably where we're going to get. I don't think it's just going to go from 0 to 100 again. Like, if you were looking to incrementally step down away from this thing, you're probably going to incrementally step back into it. So my prediction is that they'll probably start playing in front of empty arenas before they let all these fans back in, you know. I just don't like people who aren't medical experts coming out and saying, well, it's going to be August, because you don't fucking know. Joe says, while we're on COVID-19, you should rank all of the COVID in order. I don't know enough about them. I don't know enough about them to rank. If I was a medical expert, I could tell you. We'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. In that order. Jared says, top 3 union jerseys in history. Oh, that's a good shout. Yeah, you know which ones I like the best? Then they never really wore these, but they wore them a couple times in 2011. It was when they had the blue bottoms, the blue shorts, and they had the white shirts. So they wore white, blue, and then they had white socks too. They wore them during the Everton friendly in 2011. If you're looking to see what I'm talking about, Google Philadelphia Union versus Everton in 2011, which actually, trivia question, was a game that Mark Zumoff called for the Union. I like that one. I was interested in seeing the black ones, like the black on gray with the snake background this year. I thought that looked pretty cool. The white, I don't know. I mean, I kind of like plain white because I'm colorblind anyway, so I can't really tell you what's good and what's bad. I'll tell you the jerseys that I hated were in 2013 when they did that kind of like, I don't know if it was like hot pink or like neon, but there was like another stripe. It was like a neon blue or pink or something, and then you had the blue and the gold on top of it. That one felt a little weird. But I liked the ones they wore during the Everton game in 2011. John says, what are your thoughts on Sergio Santos? I thought he was a beast in the LA game, but I'm curious about your thoughts. Yeah, Peter Andrews and I talked about this a little bit on the last one, but I like that he just seems to be all over the place this year in a good way. You know, he's making those hard runs into the channels. He's a release valve for them to dump the ball into the wide areas too, because, you know, as people were pointing out, you know, when you don't play with wingers and, you know, Ray Gattis isn't really going to get forward and bomb into that space, and Ali Bedoya will get over there sometimes, but he's tucked in. He's playing as a shuttler. Then, you know, Sergio Santos is really going to help you kind of stretch things out if he's willing to make those hard sprints under the ball. And you, like I said, there's not a lot of strikers who are going to like doing that, but he kind of helps stretch the field and open things up for you and lets you play direct. And that takes the burden off of Casper too, you know, because he doesn't have to like bust his ass, and he can track back and he can win balls and he can play defense in a different way. So it's really good so far that he's been active and engaged, and he seemed to be around the ball. You know, he's finding the game, as they say. And well, that's pretty much it. Yeah, not a lot going on here. So listen, we'll try to do what we can here. You know, maybe I'll try to do one a week, one every other week or something. But if you have any ideas, or you have any special requests, you know, now's the time. You know, if you have anybody that you want me to try to get on the show, maybe we'll do some more kind of feature kind of stuff. You know, we've had people in on the past, like, you know, Dave Sheldon was on here. We were talking about sports radio when it comes to soccer and stuff like that. Maybe we'll see if we can get some of the people who do other things around the stadium to kind of give us like an insight into what it takes to do that. But, you know, if you have anything like that, give me a shout. Like I said, once we get going again, we'll get the apparel order in, and we'll do the charity thing. We'll get the live podcast going. But, for now, we can't really do anything. We're just kind of stuck here. So thanks for listening, and hopefully this helps your boredom for a little bit.